Welcome back to Three Black Dots with Dr. Tiffany, Dr. Karen, and Dr. Zanetta.
All right, y'all. Okay, I got a special drink tonight. So wait, we're going to start with Z. I have a special drink because we have a special guest. But well, Dr. Z, what you drinking?
Well, I am excited about the special guest. So I tonight have my Cherry Coke on the rocks.
Come on.
Yes. Yes. With the Cherry Coke after 8 o'clock.
Come through, Cherry Coke. We got caffeine and flavor after 8 o'clock.
Y'all are not ready for all of this.
No, it's going to be crazy tonight.
We are not ready.
Tiff, what you got going on?
Okay, well, I have something different too. I was feeling different. I have a gin gimlet tonight.
Oh, that's interesting. So tell me about that.
Very summary. It's gin and lime juice, and it is great for a hot summer night. It's hot out. I was like, I want something just cool and summery and light. Gin gimlet it is. Of course, in a NOLA glass, because obviously.
Right.
What you drinking?
Whatever. Okay. Y'all ready? So I also am feeling in a very much a summer mood, but my child, believe it or not, made sangria. So I am drinking sangria tonight. And it has fruit that's been steeped in bourbon. No, actually, not bourbon. It has been steeped in bourbon. So I'm good. I'm so good right now. And this is not my first drink.
This is not her first one.
Ashley keeps you together. So I appreciate
that. She takes care of me. It's all good. Mm-hmm. So I'm so excited about our special guest, right?
Yes.
July is Minority Mental Health Awareness Month. And our special guest is Dr. Erica Drassa, who I have known for many years. Dr. E, where are you at, my girl?
Oh my gosh. Well, first of all, welcome me. I'm like just so excited about all these drinks that are going around. It looks like everybody's really well hydrated. So that's good. Yeah.
And she said well hydrated.
I'm here.
We'll take it.
I'm here in Durham, North Carolina.
Welcome, and thank you for joining us. What are you drinking? Because we did tell you. So what's in your cup?
Yes, so like Dr. T, I too have gin. I have Conniption gin, which is made here in Durham, North Carolina, and it is the bomb.
Okay,
mixed with a little bit of elderflower tonic water, and topped off with a little bit of Saint Germain.
Came
and shut it down.
She flexed on that.
Let me
move my little Cherry Coke out of the way.
Exactly. I was going to say, see, I think you might be fired.
I am fired.
That Cherry Coke sounds amazing, though. Cherry Coke always hits the spot in the summer.
You
know, so,
When we have guests, make sure we don't get flexed on.
You know,
I love it.
No, but that's awesome. I think that means we need to have a little sponsorship. She called the local company out in the whole nine. You know, this is good. Yeah. I love
it. Gotta represent.
I love it. Oh, my goodness. Okay, so I want Dr. Z and Dr. Tiff to understand how far back we go, right?
How far?
Yes. I mean,
yes.
Erica, you and I were in medical school together, right? I mean,
yes.
That's how far back we're going. So
that's
when did you come to Duke? When did you
I came to Duke? 2001. So you, I think, were already in your PhD program at that point. Dr. Karen, MD, PhD, Ashley was a little thing.
Yes.
I always embarrass Ashley. I'm like, I remember her when she was in a fourth bringing her books to campus and studying, and you bringing her to lab. And oh man, that was just, those were the days. So 2001.
Yes. And so it's crazy. Awesome. And so, you know, I think I probably met Kopp. I met your husband first because he was the MD PhD program as well. Yep. And so, you know, I had the opportunity to meet a lot of the incoming folks before they actually even arrived on campus. Yes. And what was fascinating is that, you know, I was always struck by how amazing both of you were. And I was so honored to be at your wedding. which was, you know, I mean, I tell you, okay, so you've got to tell these ladies about your wedding.
I know it was off the hook. With the flex that she just did on
right,
the
head, that,
I
right.
know it was off the hook.
Oh, we were students, though. We, we were po.
I know it was still off the hook.
It was still off the chain.
So, you know, whatever.
That was back in 2005. Yeah, he was an MD, PhD. He was an MSTP program. So he was like deep into school. And I could like kind of see the light almost at the end. I took an extra year to pursue my MPH. But yeah, we were broke. We just kind of pulled something together. It was a family effort.
So awesome. So here's what they did. I know she's trying to be all modest. Here's one of the things that they did for the people who were in their wedding party, which struck my heart. And this is what I'm saying. This is the kind of people that we know and that are part of our family is, you know, for every single person that was in their wedding party, they went ahead and washed their feet. Right there.
Oh yes.
Wow.
Okay. Yes, with the heart of servant. Yeah, a heart of a servant.
Thank you.
Yes.
Servants, you know, servant leadership. Okay.
Yes.
Like hardcore. And that's what I was just like, okay, I am so done. Like that point was awesome. So that's
Thank you.
Love
it was a party
really
for sure.
You're with us. Yeah. Well, and so Z and Tiff, when did you first meet Erica?
I met Erica at your house.
Right. It was at your house, Karen.
Yeah.
Yes.
Yep. A couple
That's
years ago.
I thought it was probably for my birthday. Yeah. It was 2 years ago.
I met at your house. And we talked, we hit it off right off the bat.
Right.
As you can tell, I mean, you know, down to earth and open as she is. So we had a good old time. And recently I got to know her better because, as you said, heart of a servant, with all the corona isolation pandemic shutdown going on, she started offering free yoga classes and she publicized it, you know, in a group that I'm also on for Black physicians, women physicians. And so as soon as I saw her name and saw free yoga, I was like, okay, I'm there. Okay. Now, I've been practicing yoga for a minute, and by a minute, I mean years. My yoga practice is like Iyengar yoga, which is alignment and, you know, paying attention to where your toes are and your knees and, you know, slow and meditative and alignment-based practice.
Mm-hmm.
Erica said, not today. We doing power yoga. We doing vinyasa flow and you about to get strong. Now, I'm already strong from Iyengar. Don't get it twisted.
Yeah, Iyengar is no joke.
But the way she had me laid out, and she still does on Sundays.
not laid out, sis. Laid out.
No. It's laid out. I told y'all I was sore for almost a week.
No, there are times when I disappear from the screen.
Okay.
And it's not because I'm in, you know, low chaturanga. It's because I'm on the floor. Laid out.
Laid out.
And I'm going to catch the chaturanga on the next go.
Okay.
So Erica, we've been trying to convince Dr. Lamar that she needs to join us in this yoga thing. Tell us a little bit about your journey into yoga. Tell us a little bit, Erica, about your journey.
Yes. So my journey was very interesting. The first time I went to yoga was probably about 15 years ago with Sherilyn Black. I don't know if you remember her.
Yeah.
She was getting her PhD in neurobiology. And she was like, oh, you have to put me to this yoga class. And I went, and for the first 2 weeks, I was like, I literally don't know what just happened, but I can't walk. I can't move. I was like, I'm never doing that again. It's for all these like skinny girls who are like super flexible. And that is just not my body type at all. So I was like, yeah, I'm never doing that again. And then I actually quit my job in 2017, did not have any backup. I was basically like, yep, peace out. I'm done. And it was very freeing and liberating. And I found myself having a lot of just free time. And there was a class called Soul Yoga. And I was like, okay, I think I might be able to try this. It was on a rooftop and they had a DJ and the yoga instructor was Black and there were a lot of Black people and all the marketing. So I was like, okay, this seems very different than that original, like that gangster yoga class I went to 15 years ago. So we're going to give this a try. So I went and I just fell in love with it. It was so nice to just be around other people like myself and to be around all different kinds of body types. And the instructor was just very welcoming and challenging. So she taught a power yoga vinyasa flow as well. And I started practicing maybe for about 6 months, starting from more seriously, like in January 2018. And then in July, my yoga instructor said, you know, there is a program not too far from here in Chapel Hill. They're offering a scholarship for a couple of Black students just to increase the amount of Black yoga instructors in the area because there really aren't enough. And I was like, but I've only been doing this for 6 months. I don't know what I'm doing. She was like, I think you can do it. So I was like, okay. So after practicing for 6 months, then I started doing my yoga certification. And I just ended that at the end of last year. And then I started teaching yoga. Wow. So it's just, it's really random. I fell into it.
That's awesome.
I love the vibe class.
Thank you. Really enjoy it.
So Zanetta, what do you think? Do you think you might maybe take one of Dr. E's classes?
I would take her class. I really would.
Yeah, I would take her class.
Sunday. So she does pretend that she has
a beginner level class. I haven't tried that one yet because I got my butt kicked when I took a power yoga class.
I don't know where.
So just make sure that.
How was she doing on Sunday?
Thank you. That's what I said. I was like, I don't believe it.
I watch and consume.
I'll give you some modifications.
Right. Ooh. Right.
So I'm still learning.
I need the pre-K
yoga thing.
Pre-K.
Pre-K. Okay. We'll make sure this is pre-K level yoga.
We have to take a break. We'll be right back.
Like what you hear? Make sure you rate and subscribe. Three Black Docs is available wherever you get your podcasts.
You know, one of the things that, and Tiffany was the one who actually got me into yoga, and this was right after JD, after my husband died, right? Because she's like, you need to go to yoga. She had been saying that before. I was like, whatever, you know? But for me, it really helped to center my mind. And we are talking about mental health. So I do want to talk about your background because you mentioned quitting your job, which is a whole other mental health issue, which we need to talk about too. But talk to me a little bit about what you do currently and what your pathway was into that. You know, I would love to hear, I would love for our listeners to hear your story because it's incredible.
Absolutely. Well, I am a child, adolescent, and adult psychiatrist, and I am the co-partner of Catalyst Therapeutic Services in Durham, North Carolina. We treat children, adolescents, and young adults with a variety of psychiatric conditions, such as mood disorders, anxiety disorders, ADHD, psychotic disorders, you name it. The only thing we probably don't do is substance use disorders. We save that for the specialists. Eating disorders. How can I leave out eating disorders? So we do that as well. And we provide medication management services as well as therapeutic services. So right now we have two psychiatrists, including myself. And then we also have a psychologist and another therapist. And we also are subleasing space to a couple of dietitians. So we really believe in a multi-pronged approach in terms of treating mental illness. And in terms of my journey, you know, when I went to medical school, when I first met you, I did not think I was going to be a psychiatrist. I actually thought I was going to be a pediatrician. And I pretty much knew that since I was about 5 years old. I've been telling everybody, oh, I'm going to be a pediatrician. And then I got to medical school, got to my pediatrics rotation, and I was like, oh gosh, I'd hate this because I was like, if I see another case of otitis media, if I have to look in another ear again, it's ear infection after ear infection after ear. Like, really? I just thought it would be a little bit more diverse. I was not feeling it. And so I took a year off from medical school, thought I was actually going to just quit medical school and pursue dentistry until they told me I had to take something else, the dental exam instead of the MCAT. Yeah. And I was like, oh no, I'm not doing all that because I already took the MCAT. Took a couple of years.
One test.
So I took a year off, right? And then I did research in child adolescent psychiatry because I knew I still wanted to work with kids. I just didn't know in what capacity. And that's when I really fell in love with psychiatry, just being able to talk to youth, to not rush the conversation. I'm sure you all know as doctors, sometimes we're in and out in like 5 minutes.
Right.
But with psychiatry, it was really cool to be able to do a 90-minute intake where you really get to spend time with the patient and the family and get to understand, you know, how their illness may impact them at home and at school. You get to really, I tell my patients, okay, I'm going to get all up in your business. So just get ready.
Mm-hmm. At least so you give really, warning, you know?
Yeah, for real.
Right, yes, yes. So I love that aspect of medicine. So I went on to pursue psychiatry residency and then child and adolescent psychiatry fellowship. Worked in academia for about a year and figured, yeah, I'll leave that to my PhD folks like Dr. Karen and and my husband. I'll leave that to them. So I then went and worked for the state hospital for a year, and which was actually an amazing experience. It was really sad, but it was hard because we work with so many of the kids who are kicked out of other hospitals who have no home. So these are kids who are in foster care, who just bounce around from system to system. So I learned a lot about systems, systems of care, but it was really, really just tough because a lot of those kids, they just needed families, they needed homes. And it's like, okay, what is my little Adderall going to do to help a kid who actually needs a family? Yeah. So I transitioned from there and I started working at a hospital that specializes in the treatment of eating disorders and became the medical director of their adolescent hospital. And I was there for about 5 years. So I am a specialist in eating disorders, and I do see quite a bit of that in my practice. But after 5 years, I thought, you know what? I think it's time to just do something different. So I quit, like I said, without a backup plan. And it was very stressful.
That sounds familiar in this group.
Yes. And that's why yoga was, I had the time to do yoga, but I also, it was amazing because it helped with the anxiety. It helped me to center myself. Mm-hmm. It was like so calming. I said, okay, I can really, really get with this. And this is something I could probably offer to my patients. And I do already offer a lot of mindfulness techniques and strategies to my patients because that's such a big part of the therapeutic care. Seems to complement everything well. So yeah, a few months after that, started Catalyst with two of my colleagues who are also specialists in eating disorders. And now we're doing our thing 2 years later. So yeah, it's been a journey. It's been amazing. Yeah.
Awesome.
Wow.
Oh, we have a visitor. Hey, Beth.
This visitor is one of the reasons, why we called you.
Yeah.
So we're.
Yeah. Because it's something I saw on the night news, but go ahead, Zanetta.
Yeah. Go ahead, Z.
Okay. Yeah. So I am incredibly excited that you're on today. And one of the questions that we had over the last 30 years, I mean, suicides among Black adolescents has really spiked to over 70% in some studies. So what do you think is causing this spike? Is there anything that we can do about it? Or what do we need to learn as a lay community? Because this is not something that we're used to in our community. Because, you know, we would always say, oh, no, you know, Black people don't kill themselves. But, you know, it's a problem. So absolutely. I'd like to have your expertise on that.
Yeah, and I actually, this was on the nightly news one night, you know, we were just watching the news, like maybe 2 weeks ago, and I saw this stat, and I texted Zanetta and Karen and was like, I just saw this on the news, and this, you know, this seems like something that we need to talk about, even though we're oncologists, you know, we need to bring in someone, and that someone was you, so thanks. And then we had our own little discussion, but we don't know enough, so... Please.
Yeah, no, you're absolutely right, though. I mean, when that data came out, it was just alarming for so many of us. And the reality is that suicide has increased drastically for all people. So by about 30% over that same time period, but particularly for Black youth, it's increased by about 70%, which is just, I mean, that's crazy. That's insane. Wow. And when you look at the data even further, Black boys especially have higher rates of lethal means And when they looked a little further at boys between the ages of 5 to 12, they found that their rates of suicide were actually double white kids. So very alarming. And 5 to 12 year olds. Yes. Yes. And I think, you know, there are a lot of factors, I think, that can contribute to that spike. The reality is that 1 out of 5 youth at some point will have a psychiatric condition. And some experts are saying that that number may be as high as 1 out of 4, especially in the midst of COVID and everything that's going on. Kids are under so much pressure and stress right now. I think the challenge for our Black is that they are just either undiagnosed or misdiagnosed. And I think that's a big, big problem. When we think about depression, for instance, depression looks very different in kids than it does in adults. And oftentimes in kids, it looks like irritability, agitation, maybe even aggression. Sometimes that could be the primary feature of depression. Whereas we typically think of depression as somebody just sitting at home, you know, sad and crying all day. It may not look like that for kids. Wow. A white kid who is aggressive and agitated may get a workup and actually be properly diagnosed with a mood disorder, whereas a Black kid, it's probably they're going to be more likely to be disciplined for those behaviors, mm-hmm. to maybe be suspended, to be labeled as a bad kid, to even be shuffled through the juvenile justice system. What we know about the juvenile justice system is that 70% of those kids actually have some sort of untreated psychiatric condition. Mm-hmm. So we are missing the mark as providers in terms of diagnosing children. And I think there are a lot of reasons for that too. I think there's stigma in the Black community. So if your kid is acting out or if they're sad, we tend to minimize it. I've heard parents say, I don't want my kid to have a label. So I'd rather them not even go through the system, or I'm not putting my kids on any kind of medication so you could turn them into a zombie. I've heard so many different things. And I think that comes mm-hmm. from a lack of understanding about psychiatric conditions and how they can actually impact our kids. I think the other thing is sometimes we don't take seriously when they say that they want to hurt themselves or that they want to die. And, you know, there was a recent study looking at teenagers, and about 1 in 10 at some point is having suicidal ideation. So it's happening frequently. They're seeing things on the news. You know, Robert Fuller, for instance, a lot of people were saying, oh my gosh, you know, this person out in California was probably lynched by some white mob. He couldn't possibly have completed a suicide. And lo and behold, we find out today he's actually been struggling with depression, and it was a suicide. It was a suicide, but it was so hard for us as a community to even accept the fact that this young, beautiful Black male, you know, has this whole world in front of him. It's so hard for us to accept the fact that he might actually be suffering and actually take his own life due to him suffering.
So it's so interesting, because this is such a multifactorial problem, right? But
you
highlight a really important part of structural racism, right? And we talk about this a lot on Three Black Docs, and thank you so much for those who are joining on the podcast. I mean, particularly nowadays, I mean, when there is this focus, you know, after George Floyd and Ahmaud Arbery and all these things that we see, young Black children are not allowed to behave like children sometimes, right?
Yeah.
And sometimes we as Black parents will snatch our child if they're, you know, being a little rowdy or something in the store, because we know that there's difference in terms of how kids are treated. So are there things and tools that maybe, you know, because it is hard. And I think it is hard for our community in so many ways. Number one, because of the structural racism, but because of the stigma that's associated. Mm-hmm. Are there tools? Like, what sorts of things, what tools might we have in terms of thinking about not only, you know, the signs or symptoms, but how do we advocate for our children if indeed we might, as parents, notice some signs, but we have teachers and guidance counselors or even clinicians who aren't helping us diagnose the problem?
Yes. Well, first, I think we have to address the stigma that we all may or may not have regarding mental health. Mm-hmm. I think it's great that you all are talking about it as oncologists, because I think this is a subject that is just definitely overlooked. And I think now with COVID, it is just in front of our faces. So many people are struggling with psychiatric conditions and need help, need support. But I think sometimes stigma can get in the way, and pride, you know. So I think it's breaking down those barriers of stigma, being able to, number one, provide a safe space for kids to even talk about emotions. I mean, how many times have you been in a store and you see a 3 or 4 year old little boy cry and the parent's like, stop all that crying. Like, you shouldn't cry. You know, boy, you're a big boy. Big boys don't cry, you know? So we have to provide a space for our children to feel as though they can be open about their feelings, open about the things that they're struggling with their friends at school, on social media. We have to check in with those kids and be able to talk to them about what they're experiencing, and sometimes even share what we're experiencing. So we're talking about anxiety and racial trauma, you know, all the things that they're seeing and hearing on the news. They are processing this information. They're on social media where they're seeing videos of people literally getting murdered. I mean, when we think about that, that is insane that it's being shown over and over and over again, these videos of people being murdered, and our kids are seeing that every day. And being exposed to that, they are having secondary trauma. So we need to provide a space. We need to check in to ask them, what are they hearing? What are they seeing, you know, on social media? What are they talking about amongst their friends? More than likely, you know, if you have a high school student, they know someone who is either engaging in self-harm behaviors or who has attempted suicide and had to leave school, or maybe even someone who's completed suicide. So it's being able to create space, I think, as parents and adults, for kids to feel safe to talk about what they're experiencing. The second part, as you mentioned, Dr. Karen, is you really want to make sure that the parents are also being really good advocates. If you notice that there are some signs or features that you may be concerned about with your child, being able to talk to your pediatrician about that, seeking out therapy if you need to. And there are a lot of resources, of course, I can provide you with a little later, like psychologytoday.com, therapy for Black girls, things of that nature, where you can actually go and find a therapist to take your child to if you have concerns about them having a psychiatric condition. But we do have to be advocates. We have to be advocates for them in the school system as well. You know, as I mentioned, a lot of times our Black kids, our Black boys are being misdiagnosed. They're being placed in classes they really don't belong in because they probably just have untreated ADHD. You know, and I'll never forget, I had this little boy, he's maybe like 8 or 9 with ADHD, so depressed because he had internalized that he was a bad kid. He thought he was a bad kid, said his teachers didn't like him. Nobody liked him. The students didn't like him. He wasn't doing well in school. After doing a thorough evaluation, come to find out he actually has ADHD. Now, it took some time for me to kind of coach the parents into allowing him to take a medication to treat his ADHD. But I tell you, once his ADHD was treated, he started making A's. He was doing great in class. He actually came to the session like, Dr. D, I can't believe it. I made an A. I'm doing good, you know, and it just helped his whole perception of himself because he had internalized that he was a bad kid. So untreated ADHD had led to depression. It led to bullying. It led to him being labeled, all those things. And this is a kid, if you could think out past 8, 9, 10, 11, you can already imagine what the trajectory could have been had he not been treated for his ADHD and depression. So that's just an example.
So what are some strategies to create that safe space for your kids? Because with my son, he is telling me things now that maybe a teacher told him 2 or 3 years ago that I would have lost it had I known that this was happening. But I didn't know. I mean, he was just... You know, he was getting in trouble. And I'm like, what's going on? But he never communicated that to me until recently. And so I thought I was creating a safe space. And I think any advice that you have on strategies would be very helpful.
Absolutely. Well, I think the most important thing, I think, in creating a safe space is making sure that it is a non-judgmental, non-critical environment for them. Because if they feel as though they are going to be judged or should feel ashamed of whatever is happening, it's going to be really hard for them to communicate. So we need to make sure that we provide a space where you say, look, you know, we're not going to criticize anyone or you. We just want to really understand what's happening in your day-to-day life and being able to talk. And also sometimes limited self-disclosure, like I said a little earlier, can be helpful so that they see, okay, it's fine if you have a tough day and you have a rough day and things happen. So you may want to even share, man, mommy had a really tough day at work today. You know, there are some people who said some really unkind things and it made me sad, but then I was able, being home with you all to talk about it actually helps me to feel better. So sometimes it's, we are able to model for them how to process emotions in a healthy way. I think sometimes we think that as adults, we have to keep all of our feelings from our kids so that they can see we're like happy all the time and strong all the time. But sometimes that can be a disservice, right? Because then they don't know how to deal with really tough emotions. Then I see them when they get to college and they fail for the first time. They're like, like I've never experienced this before. What help? It's like, that's so funny. Okay, yeah. You never learn how to do this. Okay, we just never learn how to deal with being disappointed before. We need to learn, you know, what is it like to feel disappointed? What is it like to feel sad or angry? You know, that there's room in this space to have those emotions. We don't want to, you know, shut those emotions off.
Yeah, we're gonna take a quick break. This has been really fantastic. For our listeners, we're so grateful to have Dr. Erica Drassa with us. She's a child and adolescent child psychiatrist, and we're so very grateful for you being on the show at Three Black Docs here. We are excited that we're able to celebrate Minority Mental Health Month with you. So stay tuned. We'll be right back.
Three Black Docs is not intended as medical advice. All opinions are our own. Three Black Docs is produced by Wings Productions.
Like what you hear? Make sure you rate and subscribe. Three Black Docs is available wherever you get your podcasts.